If your sales for wholesale have stalled, I want you to take 2 minutes today and do something about it. I built a quiz to help you find and fix your wholesale blind spot. It's 7 questions, takes 2 minutes, and you will walk away knowing what's standing between you and stronger sales on the wholesale side of things. It's free, it's fast, and it might be the most useful 2 minutes that you spend on your business this week. Go to prooftoproduct.com/blindspot. That's prooftoproduct.com/blindspot and take this free quiz today. Hey friend, welcome back to Proof to Product. Today I'm joined by my friend Kimberly Yerkowitz, owner of Measure Twice, an independent gift shop in Brooklyn, New York. Kimberly has worn a lot of hats in the consumer gift industry over the years. She worked retail managing large gift shops. She had a successful career as a sales rep. She worked closely with brands behind the scenes, mentoring them as they made decisions about their product line and pricing and more. And for the last 7 years, she's owned and operated her successful brick and mortar shop, Measured Twice, alongside her husband. Last time we had Kimberly on the podcast was 2024, so it has been a minute. And in this episode, we are catching up about buying patterns, rising product costs, what brands are getting right and wrong when pitching stores, and why industry standards still matter as wholesale sales strategies continue to evolve. We also get into a really important conversation about pricing. If you have been nervous about raising your wholesale prices, Kimberly shares some incredibly honest perspective from the retailer side that I think will be reassuring for a lot of you to hear. Towards the end of the episode, we also talk about what independent retailers are craving right now, specifically what she is craving, products with personality, points of view, and brands that aren't afraid to stand out in the marketplace. It was really great catching up with Kimberly and having this candid but fun conversation about her shop, the state of the industry, and more. Today's episode is brought to you by our Is Wholesale Right For You workshop. This free 25-minute on-demand workshop is perfect for you if you have hit a plateau in your wholesale sales and you're not sure where to go next. Or if you're considering adding wholesale to your business, this would also be good for you. We're talking concrete action steps that you can take right away to boost your sales. Head to prooftoproduct.com/workshop for free access. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/workshop. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Kimberly Yerkowitz, welcome back to Proof to Product. So happy to see you today.
I'm so happy to see you.
How are you?
I'm well.
I know that's a loaded question to start off the episode with.
I like to say, like, daily, I'm well. And then Big picture, it's anybody's guess.
Who knows what's going on today, right? Okay, for our listeners, you've been on the podcast a few times. You were way back on in episode 9 where we talked about catalogs and the importance of that. You were on, I'm looking at my notes here, 337 talking about exclusivity in retail, which was a really popular one. But that one came out in 2024, so you and I haven't like officially talked for the podcast for a couple years now.
A while.
I thought it would be fun to catch up. So I want to talk about some buying patterns. I want to talk about some how things in the shop are going. I want to talk about a lot of different things, but I also know that you and I like to riff a little bit. So let's just see where it goes. Talk to us about Measure Twice. How are things in the shop right now?
Things at the shop are great. We have a card and gift store, for those who don't know, in the Cobble Hill neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York City. We've been open almost 7 years now.
Amazing. Congrats.
Which sometimes feels like one and sometimes feels like 17.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, by the way. Yeah, and we're year over year growth and we're staying alive and loving it. And here we are.
Awesome. And you run the shop with your husband, too.
I do, Zach Barocas. It's just us right now. We don't have staff. We have had part-timers in the past. And last year, we went through a little bit of a lease bump, speed bump. And so we were like, you know what? Let's just conservatively play it so we don't spend the money we don't have to spend right this second. And then it cleared up and it was fine. So we'll get back to that shortly. But yeah, we've grown in the neighborhood. We like everything we're doing. Everything has, knock wood, been successful.
That's great. not surprised, though. I mean, your history is pretty rich in this industry.
It's our industry.
Your history in this industry has been quite rich. I mean, you worked in other people's shops. You were a sales rep for a long time. You've worked intimately with a lot of brands, helping them develop their product line and come up in the early days of their careers. Now having this shop, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, do you feel like you get to work with multiple friends across the industry because of your rich background in this industry?
You know what's fun too? Yes, is the answer, of course. Like, that's part of the reason why we did it. And those relationships we've sustained those. But what's cool is all the new people too. I don't think I anticipated, or I just, when you're opening, like, your tunnel vision on getting open. And I pictured maybe 1 or 2 years ahead, like, this is what it's going to look like. But I didn't know what it was going to look like 7 years ahead.
7 years down the line. Well, when you're first starting out, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume that you're going to turn to the people you know, trust, and already love their product to stock your store. And then, as you continue to, like, add the years to things, you're going to start to branch out a little bit more. You're going to start getting pitches from new brands. You're going to start thinking about, how do we want to merchandise things? And so have you been bringing gift items in, or are you primarily cards and desktop?
No, we're pretty gift heavy also. Okay. Yeah, you know, it depends. Like, so we have our 5 staples, and it's always cards, notebooks, candles, pens, and party.
Okay.
Which really, to be honest, is 95% Mary Mary. So I could just say it's our Mary Mary category. And then outside of that, it's whatever we want. So sometimes it's a bunch of books. Sometimes it's a bunch of tabletops. Sometimes it's a mix of seasonal stuff. We're lucky that that's kind of like whatever we're feeling. Like, we have enough good response and support that our whim is sort of catered to, which is nice.
That is nice. I'm curious. You get a lot of pitches all the time. We've talked about this in the past a little bit. I want to talk about how your buying has shifted potentially, but also what you're seeing from these newer brands that are coming up and the pitches you're receiving. Does it excite you? Does it feel like a slog to get through? Is it a combination of all of it?
Yeah, it's both. It's for sure both. And only a slog because there's a lot of it. It's not a slog like, oh God, I have to do this terrible task.
I have to look at these beautiful things.
Oh no, people want to be in our store. Damn it. In a practical sense, it's helpful to have it all in front of me instead of having me to go
source it yourself. Yeah.
Make time to go source it or to go find it. That's a lot of labor off my plate to just have it appear. So that's great. We love getting pitched. And it's still mostly stationery. I think we are a stationery store. Like, we have a lot of gift product. Sometimes I say we're like a mini department store. So most of our pitching is still from the paper industry.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's great. I mean, it's how we find stuff. That's half of how we find stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Given the volume of pitches you receive, though, I assume you're not able to get back to everybody that sends you an email.
I don't. You know what? I'll own this. I'm the least responsive buyer that people are going to hear from, and I always feel terrible about it. However, if you don't hear from us, it doesn't mean we don't like your stuff. Sometimes I am slow, and a year later, I'm like, I love that. I remember that. It was just timing. So I want Lens to hear that. It doesn't mean it's a no. It means I'm very busy.
Okay, I want to let you off the hook here and be like, you're not the only retailer that says this. No, I know you are probably internalizing this of like, oh, I'm the worst retailer ever. I never get back to people.
I'm so rude.
No, you're not rude. I tell folks all the time, and I hear this from buyers over and over again, everyone's freaking busy. And it really depends on when that touch point lands. If you have time to sit there and look at the catalog, you will look at the catalog. If you do need those items, you will order them right then and there. But if you're busy, you may miss the email. You may see the subject line. You may see the brand's name in your inbox. And like, that's the only touch point you really have at that moment. But it's not, I hate you. I never want to hear from you. Your products suck.
Exactly. Exactly. And who would feel that anyway?
No, I mean, but people do. People get real hard on themselves when they're like, I haven't heard back from anybody. And it's like, it's not you, babe. It's the world is busy. And
yeah, I would advise, don't not reach out again if you didn't hear back from somebody.
Yeah.
That's not annoying to reach out again. I'm not going to be like, look, it's already no, I would have called you, or I would have written to you, or I would have bought stuff. So, I mean, if you can afford it, not everybody, you can't, it's expensive to mail out materials. Certainly keep send. I like being reminded too, even if it's like a postcard, like, oh yeah, that's that one thing.
I do think for the brands, it's important that they understand how much is going on in the store. And you're not just sitting at a computer waiting for the pitches to come in so that you can ignore them.
I think it depends. You don't always know the size of the company.
Yeah.
My email says buyer, just so people, when I'm writing to people, people know that I'm interested in buying things.
Yeah.
I'm on the sales floor all day long too. Like I also do like all of those other tasks. And some other bigger stores or chains have buyers, have buying departments, have buying assistants, like the whole thing. Like I'm not, like if I could devote 40 hours a week to buying, I'd be way better at it.
That'd be so fun too, right?
Oh, dream come true.
I know. Okay, let's talk about your buying patterns. How have they switched right now compared to a few years ago? Like, are you buying more cautiously, more intentionally, different types of categories? Like, what are you kind of looking at?
Yeah.
All of the above?
Everything. Actually, what just went through my head is all the stuff I have to do. I'm like, oh my God, my buying list.
I didn't mean to make you regurgitate your to-do.
No. Because it is so interesting to me and sort of a surprise and maybe not a surprise, like I hope that this means that we're good at business, but because our five top categories have remained the same the whole time, that makes it easier. And I don't have to change that. I just have to zero in on really nailing those five.
Yeah. The way you rattled those off was so pro move, by the way. You're just like, these are our five categories. And
only because it's been the same the whole time.
Yeah.
But if you were like, in 2022, I'd be like, pfft.
But that's because you've been doing this for 7 years and you've had practice and you've refined your systems and you know what your customers want and you have conversations with your customers. Like you are really honed in on what they need. And so that makes it easier for you to turn around to the brands and vendors you're working with and say, okay, this is what I need too.
Yes. I think one of our strong suits, even though I'm exhausted all the time, is working in the store is so much research.
Yeah, for sure.
It's irreplaceable in my opinion. Like if you are an owner operator and you don't work in your store, I would advise getting in your store once a week or once every 2 weeks or once a month or you know, whatever. Watching people, it's a whole psychological experiment right in your pocket.
For the listeners that have brands, the trade show experience is a micro version of that.
Oh my God, totally.
Watching people navigate around the booth and what they're drawn to, what they're picking up, what they're laughing at, what they're touching, what they're buying. There's a lot of just paying attention to that.
Paying attention. Yes. It is all data research. Totally. I love it. You asked if we were a little bit more playing it conservative or being a little bit safer. Tariffs certainly played into the last year and a half for sure.
Yeah.
We carry a lot of international stuff. There's French candles and Japanese notebooks and British card lines. And I think we rolled that back a little bit. I don't even know if we rolled it back, but we were a lot more cognizant of it. Like we were like, okay, where is this going to fit in? And how much more is this going to be kind of thing? Or where can we raise our prices to even? How are we going to eat this?
Yeah.
So I think it was a little bit more strategic.
Yeah.
We needed a little bit more planning.
That makes sense.
But I don't know that we rolled it back. I think there's maybe one line that we didn't order just because it was price prohibitive.
Yeah. I feel like over the last couple of years, we've really seen a shift where in the olden days, our glory days.
Thank you. Thank you.
Those are my days. I said we. We see shops come to the trade shows twice a year. They place large orders. They place future orders. But it was concentrated buying. And now with fair, with the economy, with the tariff situation, with people very closely watching their cash flow. I've talked about this on the show before. Like we've seen the shift in buyer behavior where folks are placing smaller, more frequent orders. Still at minimum. Still at your order minimums, friends. Don't lower those for anyone. But there's more... I don't want to say there wasn't strategy then. There was. It was just a different strategy. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that's still your pattern, right? You're still doing
– Yeah.
You're ordering every month probably because the other thing is cash flow but also space considerations too, right?
New York stores in general don't have any storage.
Yeah.
Most don't. I would say that we order later, closer to an event.
Holiday,
Or an occasion, And – we just got through Mother's Day. I'm not sure when we're airing, but we're taping it after Mother's Day. There were lines I ordered twice from, which I realize that's not so strategic with shipping costs. However, we prepay a lot. I have terms with my big brands. I like to prepay my little brands. Mm-hmm. It's just easier for my brain. I don't want to lose an invoice and then be the guy that forgets to pay a thing and measure twice, never pays their bills or whatever. So we prepay a lot of our smaller lines. If I look at something sitting on the floor that's in like receiving that's not on the sales floor, I freak out like, oh my God, we already paid for that. And why isn't it out?
Yeah.
So timing wise, I ordered early on the stuff that I knew we would do for Mom, Dad, Grad.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, we actually need more of that.
Yeah.
And there's time. I'm paying enough attention to it. I'm on the floor. I can see who's buying what and what's selling fastest. Some brands we ordered twice from. Works for us. I'm not saying everyone should do that or that's a lesson, but that's how we do it sometimes.
Right. I was also going to add that you know which brands can also get you stuff quickly.
Yeah.
You've worked with so many folks and the people that are kind of core part of your shop, you know who can get stuff quick, who might need a little extra time and all of that too. So placing a secondary order
Yeah. Can I tell you my favorite kind of email pitch from Align?
Please do. Everyone listening.
If I get an email 10 days out from a major holiday that says in the subject line, we can ship in 2 days, you better believe I'm ordering it.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you need to say. But make sure you are. That's
make sure you can deliver on this promise.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I will tell you a little fast fact here, because you know, and my listeners know, I see inside a lot of different product businesses, right? Like, I'm very involved. And that is one of the strategies that my advisory board group uses a lot.
It works.
Mm-hmm. We do 10 to 14 days out. We put in the subject line, quick ship, ready ship now, how many days it'll, we play around with different subject lines, of course. But the key there is you as the brand are then providing a service. You're making it an easy yes, as you just said, Kimberly. Like, yeah, I need this, or yeah, I'm low on this mom, dad, grad stuff. I need it now. But yes, must deliver on promises. We cannot say 2 days if we can't get it out in 2 days, please.
That's right. I have noticed too. So with, I don't know if it's tariff related. It probably is. And eventually it will be fuel related because of the war. Some of our big brands are shipping slower. So I need to be more on the ball and more predictive about stuff that we're not out of yet to know. I know it's going to take a month instead of 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can see that.
Which is a bummer. And I don't know how long that's going to go for. It's not like a supply chain thing like during COVID. It's not that emergency, but it's noticeable. There's a couple pen lines that we're like, oh, we're not going to get that until, or we missed the Mother's Day window. Like, oh, like we can't get more of those before. Like we just, it's, we have to adjust.
Are brands communicating pretty well with you on that?
Not at all.
Really? Tell me more, because that disappoints me.
They're not small brands. They're big brands. They don't care.
Right hand's not talking to left hand. Yep, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would be helpful too is if the reps would be like, hey, our Mary Mary rep is my friend Jennifer, and she's awesome. And she always says, hey, this is going to take a while, so get this in. That's always really helpful too. So my second favorite email is when a rep says, this is going to watch out. This is, they're shipping in a month. So get in on this.
Yeah. Cause I have to imagine as a retailer, I wouldn't be going to check if all my standard brands were adjusting their turnaround times.
No, you find out the hard way is how.
Yeah. You find out when it doesn't make it on time or when.
Yeah.
That gives me the ick.
Like, why don't we have this yet? Or I'll forget. We don't have like a, this is when we track our receiving stuff, but every order I place, I don't think, oh, we'll probably get this here. Like there's not a.
No, but there is a certain amount of strategic planning that you're doing around things. You're looking at cash flow space.
When I'm like, hey, we never got the whatevers.
Yeah.
And then I'll look and I'll be like, oh, it's because, yep, they're behind.
Interesting.
Or I'll write and say, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's fair too, to be like, hey, what's up? Is there anything you're having a hard time finding that you want for the store? Like, are any product categories, there's a hole in the market?
Not yet. I fear that's going to happen with holiday. I fear a little bit. I don't want to start a panic because I might be wrong.
This is just our opinion.
Certainly not right. Sorry. I fear that the fuel stuff is going to worsen as we get closer to holiday and anything international is going to have like shipping weirdness.
Are you stocking up then on things that you know you need?
Like jet fuel, boat fuel? I don't know.
Yeah.
Not yet. Not yet. I will prioritize what I need to know.
Like,
time-wise first, and I will talk to my reps about that, figure out what's best to do. I mean, people always say order because we'll run out of stuff, and it isn't just the running out of stuff. It's, is it going to cost the same amount of the order in shipping costs?
So let's talk about that, because I've been posting on Threads, and I actually have a podcast coming out soon. It'll be out already by the time this airs, about do you need to raise your prices? And I know this is not a fun conversation to have with retailers because you guys want the highest margins. We want the highest margins. But also at the same time, especially the indie brands that listen to this show and that work with you, a lot of them, Kimberly, have been absorbing all of the added costs. Prices of supplies and materials have gone up. The tariff situation was rough. All the things you're experiencing, they are also experiencing, but they haven't raised their prices. It's coming. They're going to have to raise their prices to keep things sustainable. And so I guess my question to you is, what do you think about that? And could you provide any encouragement to the brands that are listening right now that you're not going to stop ordering from them if they raise their prices a quarter or whatever?
Of course not. Here's my caveat, though. I live in New York. Our store is in a really affluent neighborhood, so I have a little bit more wiggle room to go up than I know other stores in other parts of the country do. And you can't charge different prices to cities versus towns. I would rather people be strategic. We know why. We know you're not greedy. We know you're not gouging us.
Yep.
I don't want to feel a wallop at the end and be like, $4 for cards now. Like, what are you, nuts? You can't just jump like that. Step up, you know?
Yeah. So incremental. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Don't be afraid. If you're afraid we're going to stop ordering, that won't happen.
They're very afraid of that. Yes.
Oh, no, no, no. Babies. No, no. We won't. Just so you know, there's plenty of card lines that we buy that are already $3 and $3.25 and $3.50.
Yeah.
There's room. Yeah. In fact, some of our longtime vendors and our favorite brands are still at, like, I'll see them jump from $2.50 to $2.75. And I think, well, it's about time. Like,
it's
give
me
a raise. Like, yeah. Go up to three. I like my profit margin. But three is not crazy.
That's the balance. I think it's interesting to me. I mean, it's not just card manufacturers. I've got people making jewelry and the price of gold has gone up. I've got candle makers and the vessels that come from overseas have gone up. We've got folks across the board making all sorts of products who have, most have been absorbing those added costs, trying to keep the prices low for their customers, but it's just getting to a point where they can't. And so I think it's helpful to hear from a retailer that you got to do what you got to do. We're going to do what we got to do on our end too, of course, but we're in the business to make money. And with that money, we can create a meaningful impact in our local communities. We can hire people on our teams. Like, there's so much we can do. And so, I don't know, I think it's been fascinating to me to see some of the mental gymnastics that folks are doing about raising their prices. I understand, and their fears are completely valid. But also, I think it's refreshing and helpful for them to hear from you say, no, if you got to raise it, you got to raise it.
Yeah, I think retailers need to be brave on that front too. Like, we hear sometimes our holiday selection single cards, I'm just talking about cards again, will be a little bit more expensive. We will go higher in the nicer cards. That's not, I don't mean that judgmentally at all, but the more expensive cards we will. So our holiday cards are a little bit more expensive than maybe our everyday cards are.
Right.
And I hear people say like, what? Wow, cards have gone up, or this is how much cards are. And what I want to say is the cards are this much at CVS and Target. So let's not be crazy.
Yeah. And those are mass produced and lower quality. Yeah.
Right. Like, this is handmade art, blah, blah, blah. I think cards were underpriced for a long time, which, what am I going to teach my customers that? Like, that's silly. But 10 years ago, cards were $2.50.
Yeah, I know.
So of course they can be higher. Yes, raise your prices, everybody. It's okay.
We're just going to call this episode Permission Slip. And
that's so good. Yes.
I'm teasing. Yes. But no, I appreciate having this conversation with you because it's been a hot topic in our labs community with my advisor. I mean, I just got back from my advisory board retreat, and this was many a hot seat of people thinking about their notebooks and their washi and all the, because just like you were talking about, the tariffs impacted timing and margins and all this.
Yep.
They've been having that, plus there's just a lot happening that's causing this more urgent need to, like, actually do the price increase. I did share with folks, like, give your loyal buyers a chance to purchase now at the existing prices before you bump them. I think that's a really good relationship builder and also a nice cash infusion boost.
Yep.
But yeah.
How do you feel about teaching people to eat the costs in a, not necessarily card costs in supply costs for cards in the card pricing? I think there's room for cards to be more expensive. I don't think there's more room for stickers to be more expensive.
Yeah.
What if you're only a sticker company? Then that's harder on you. But if you can eat more, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, so you're talking individual stickers tapped it to wholesale?
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Like, make your cards more expensive, even if your cards aren't costing you more, so that you don't raise your sticker prices.
Right. I think each brand needs to look at their collection overall and see, they need to be looking at their numbers more closely. And that's where a lot of folks fail. They're not looking at their numbers closely. And then the margin on one product category may shrink a lot, whereas others may have more room, like you said, to widen. And so to me, it's a big puzzle that needs to be figured out. It shouldn't be something like we're raising the price across the board on every single product that's going out the door. We need to look at individual categories and say, okay, where do we have room to up the margin on this? And for something like stickers, I agree with you. I think $2 wholesale is kind of the cap for that right now.
It is.
As you cringe.
I do. Yeah. I hear people going like, oh no, I can't make stickers work. Figure it out somewhere else if that's the
Yes, that's where I would go back to them and say, if you can't make $2, and I would say this across any product category, right? But since we're talking stickers right now, I would say to them, okay, well, then we need to go back to your manufacturing process and see how are you creating this sticker and what's your margin with what it is now? Because yeah. I work with thousands of people, hundreds of people selling stickers, and they're able to make great margins on a $2 wholesale price point for stickers. And so maybe it's a matter of upping your quantities when you're producing it. Maybe it's a matter of switching manufacturers. Like, there's lots of different ways to massage those numbers, so to speak.
Retailers do that too. Like,
yeah,
if I love a sticker and it's $2.50 and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to go to $6 on a sticker because that's insane for my customer.
Yeah. And you have an affluent customer too.
Yes, but I can make it up somewhere else in the rest of their order.
I didn't say that eloquently. You said that much more concisely. No. But that is how I am working with my clients individually too. It's the bigger picture of looking at the product mix, looking at what the margins are doing. And really only one of the questions we often get at Paper Camp, which you know because you were one of our coaches for a long time, what profit margin should I be aiming for? What profit margin should I be getting? And honestly, obviously I want the highest profit margin possible for everybody, but also it's that blended rate that ends up being what keeps us afloat. Yeah. No, I appreciate this conversation. It's helpful to talk through, and you know the brand side of things so well as the shop side. So you can speak to both, which is good.
It's hard. It's hard to literally you're asking for money. That's a weird, give me money. That's a weird place to be.
And I think that's why people are worried. I think they know.
For sure.
Yeah. The brands care very deeply about their indie shops that they're working with. And they know that so many have either gone out of business or changed what they want. Gone out of business out of choice, like they didn't want to do it anymore or because financially it wasn't sustainable. But the brands don't want to be an added burden for the shops. And that's valid and that's understandable. But at the same time, if we're not profitable as a brand, we're not going to be sustainable either.
Do you feel like the industry should do it at the same time, like the standard should be cards are $3 now? Or
my take, Kimberly, is that it's going to be a domino effect. There's going to be a handful of people that do it, and they're just kind of waiting on the sidelines, and folks start moving stuff up. And to your point, I really just want to stress for our listeners, there are certain categories that have space to move up more so than others, but it's interesting.
Well, I was telling you offline that even with tariffs, even with shipping costs that are sure to go up, there's only one brand that we love and our customers like it's a successful brand. There's only one brand that we have on hold right now. And it's not a card or a jewelry. It's like a big maker.
Yeah.
It's accessories that we sell that their fabrics are dyed in India.
Very cool.
And that jump was too much. The tariff, the jump on that was, I was like, oh, their jump is high and that we'd have to at least double that. It's just on hold for right now.
Yeah.
But everything else, not everybody can absorb, but be confident that most people will absorb and you'll be okay.
Okay. You're speaking for yourself as one single retailer.
Yes.
But I think it's helpful for folks to hear this because as they're making their own decisions and looking ahead, it's reassuring.
Yeah. I'm also cheerleading with my old rep hat on. Go do it. Give yourself a raise. That's where most people are at without price fixing. That's what the standard is for the industry.
Okay, Kimberly, I want to circle back on one thing. You have stated in the past that you are not a fan of, I know you knew this was coming. You've stated in the past that you are not a fan of FAIR and that you prefer not to use it for wholesale purchasing. And in fact, you do not, or when we talked last, you were not using it. Has that changed at all? Has your opinion on FAIR changed?
It has not changed. We don't use it. We have not ever used it. We don't plan on using it. I am dyed in the wool Gen X where anti-corporate everything existed. And that's just how people thought. And I know people don't think that anymore. I know it has gone 180 almost, but we don't shop at Amazon. We don't shop at Target. We don't shop at from FAIR. We don't use Spotify. There's a whole political attachment to things that we don't want our money supporting. Mm-hmm. So with that, so that's a personal choice. And a lot of people, there's a couple lines that I'm still waiting to order from and they will not help me. All they keep doing is, it might be a bot now that I'm thinking about it. I just keep getting responses with FAIR links and I'm like, we don't use FAIR. Like, please let us order from your website
or
let me send you an email and nothing. I know it's a tool. I know it is helpful. I personally think it has introduced standards that are unsustainable.
I agree with you.
For the market. And I know it has been really helpful with people building their business. I like that people are like sort of learning, oh, it's not the only thing I have to do. There's a lot of other work to be done.
There's a lot of people that think it's the only thing to do. Like, it's how you sell wholesale.
Oh, like, I'm unfair. So now here we go.
Ta-da. Yeah.
Well, just think about statistically, the more people that do that, the harder it is to find you. Mm-hmm. That's just 101 level. That's just basic math. The more people on the merry-go-round.
Yeah.
I don't know anything else about FAIR other than that we don't use it.
But it hasn't hurt your business because you're building relationships and you're connecting with, other than those few brands that keep sending you the links to FAIR.
Yeah.
You haven't had an issue ordering direct from anyone, right?
Never once.
Yeah.
Never once. Yeah.
So I'm sure you've seen this with the Paper Camp alums that you've bought from. We're seeing a lot more people that are kind of putting FAIR on cruise control, kind of like back in the Etsy wholesale days where mm-hmm. people left it up as just a space to catch or even a point of sale, but they're definitely building out their own. If they haven't already, they're definitely building out their own wholesale portals and kind of redirecting people there instead of to FAIR. But it's a tool. It does provide a lot of value to the younger brands who don't have the funding or the capacity to build their own wholesale website.
Yep.
You know my take on it. Like, use it for the benefits it provides. Don't if you don't want to use it. But also what I always tell the brands too is like, recognize that not every buyer wants to order on FAIR.
Yes.
And you are one of those. So I think it's helpful for them to be reminded of that.
Yeah. I wonder too if FAIR, we have to unteach some things that FAIR thinks they're teaching people. Like,
have you seen my threads, girl?
Your minimum shouldn't be $35. That's insane. And it's not because you're making people buy six of something. Don't lower it to four. Like, all the standards that have been in place for all this time, FAIR being like, who cares? Don't do that.
Yeah.
Yes, please do that at least, just as a good business tactic.
I feel like I'm fighting that good fight every day of combating the, because, you know, the brands that are brand new who then hop on FAIR and they listen to what FAIR have to say, that makes a whole lot of sense. You're going to listen to the platform and they're going to tell you, here's what you need to do. And you're going to follow those instructions. And that makes a whole, they don't know what they don't know, right?
Right.
So it's not their fault that they have no idea that there are these industry standards. But that being said, not following the industry standards creates red flags.
Yes.
It tells buyers like, hey, you are new, or hey, you are a FAIR brand, essentially, meaning somebody that's launching on FAIR primarily as wholesale.
Yep.
And I think people sometimes look at me a little crazy when I tell them, hey, you need to up your minimums. You need to be, given the size of your product line, the price point of your items, like, you need to be at least at this number, you know? And they were like, what? And I'm like, no, a $25 order is not a wholesale order.
No, that's someone shopping, right?
Yeah, that's a personal order. That's just for funsies.
Any buyer, any store that's in business and still doing business knows that they have to order $150 or something. Like, that's
right.
Yeah.
And I remember Julie, when she owned Sweet Paper, coming to Paper Camp once, and she's like, it is not hard for me to place a $150 order. And if anyone says it's hard for them, then they're not the shop for you. And this was years ago, and I'm generalizing, and I'm not saying that shops that can't do 150 order aren't valid, but it provided a lot of really good perspective hearing her say that. Like, I take my business seriously. $150 is not very much. I have so many things running through my head right now. The other thing I want to say is those minimums and those industry standards also are there to guide you guys as the retailers on how to yes. merchandise and display the that's product. Right. If you're buying onesie twosies of things, that's not going to sell through quickly and well in your store. If you have an assortment of items that you can put on display, that's going to sell through more quickly.
Yeah. Also, what that tells me, so this is another permission thing. Buyers know to do that. Yes, we're all happy to give you $150 for our first order. I would never not be like, oh, I can't meet the minimum. Like, that's...
Yeah. And if you can't, you would wait and do it when you can.
Of course. The red flag that I get from people who are like, oh, my minimum is $65 or whatever, is that you're not going to be around for my next reorder, or you don't have enough knowledge or experience yet to know what a functioning line needs to look like. And so you're not going to have holiday when I want it, or you're not going to have a new release when we need it.
Yeah. You're not releasing on the site.
Because all of those things go to, I mean, it's the Paper Camp Foundation, right? It's
yeah.
All of these things need to be enacted
yeah.
to put you in the market.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I appreciate you.
Meet those minimums, everybody.
Meet those minimums. Follow the industry. I also think, too, that industry standards exist for a reason.
Yeah, they're not arbitrary. Like, you didn't make them up because you felt like it and everyone's supposed to do it now.
No. And there's a lot of reasons why that a lot of people don't even realize. Greeting cards specifically. Vertical cards, you can fit more on a shelf. You can maximize square footage. They fit better on a spinner. If you do horizontals, they're going to get turned sideways. Like, there's a lot of that nuance that I didn't know when I started my greeting card line, sure. But I figured it out and learned. But I think some of that nuance, I don't know. It's important.
I think there's a lot of shortcut. Again, Gen X, let's go back to the 90s. When we grew up, you either worked in a restaurant or a store. Like, that was your part-time job when you were growing up. Or, you know, maybe you babysat or whatever.
I ran my own babysitter club. Go on.
That's amazing. Or you walked dogs or you delivered newspapers. Or, like,
totally.
I don't mean to be old-timey. But if you know more about how a store works if you've worked in a store.
Yeah. And it's that nuance that comes from the conversations, the witnessing, the seeing,
right.
All of it. Yeah. That happens in like our community where people are asking questions or they're coming through the programs and learning these things. And the amount of times I hear, oh my God, I didn't realize that was the reason that there's an MOQ of six.
Yeah. No judgment. You're not born knowing that.
No, none of us.
Pay attention if someone's trying to help you with it.
No, for sure. And again, we all start in the same place at the beginning, not knowing anything, and we don't know what we don't know. So there's, again, no shame in this. It's just more of like, no, these things are important, and it's good to understand them so that you can align. You'll be better off if you align yourself with these industry standards.
100%.
Even if you don't understand the reasons behind them quite yet.
That's right. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah. It's been so fun chatting with you.
It is always my pleasure.
Hearing your updated perspectives on things. I want to kind of cap this off with, you are a true advocate for independent retail and independent creators, independent sellers. And so I would like to hear from you. What are you excited about as you look forward to what's happening in the independent world of art creation and selling and retail?
I love when we come across lines that feel really personal. Such a generalization.
No.
When we talk about point of view, it's not just happy birthday and script on a card or whatever, which, no judgment, we have those. People sell those. People need those.
Yep.
I'm so psyched when we find stuff. I used to want all designers and makers to have gone to design school or art school, and that's not realistic anymore.
That's not realistic, no.
Not at all.
I didn't go to art school.
That's right.
And I had a line for 8 years.
That's right. But if someone has a really strong point of view, or there's a narrative or weaved into it, or do you know who, this is a little bit of a circuitous, but there's an interior designer named Lily Walters. Do you know her? Do you follow her?
Not well, but I do follow a bit. Yep.
I like when she's like, make your house weirder. Your house isn't weird enough. That's so sweet spot for me. Not that I want card lines or jewelry lines to be the weirdest things on earth, but I love risk taking. Like, I want to see a little bit more of haunting, narrative, poetic, brilliant, lovely something. Like, that to me is, I think we're short of that. And I think we're so starved for it.
We're starved for it. Yeah.
Like, how excited we were about the Olympics and how excited we were about the moon joy.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were surprised by how much we were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
We are starved for it. So I'm excited about anything that can come in that sort of package.
I love that you're saying, like, step into your weirdness, step into what makes you uniquely you, because in a creative world where I hear from folks every day, oh, this is a saturated market. Why would I get into a saturated market? And it's like, no, you're bringing your own unique viewpoint to the table here and putting that on these products. I will say that if you do find yourself just, you know, slapping happy birthday on something because that's what you think you need to be doing, or, oh, I need to beef up that collection, then your heart's not going to be in that. And that's not going to sell that well. But if you bring that unique point of view, like you're talking about, and I agree with you, people are hungry for it. They want to see the differentiation.
Yeah.
They want to get to know the people behind the brand and why they created that thing.
That's right. Even if it's just, think about a different way. Your card doesn't have to say happy birthday. It can be a different version of happy birthday.
Yeah.
Anything that is just more than status quo.
Yeah.
Is delicious.
I feel like during the pandemic, the love and friendship section got a major overhaul with it. Instead of folks just saying happy Valentine's Day or I love you or whatever, it really branched out into chosen family and love stuff. And I feel like that's a really good example for people to look at.
Perfect. Yep.
To see, what do they mean? how do I expand on a category without saying the traditional? And I think that love and friendship went from just a Valentine's Day sales period to a year-round everyday sales period.
Yep, to a whole everyday connection
yeah.
that everyone needs and everyone is like buying into. Love it.
Yeah. All right, Kimberly, what's next for you in Measure Twice? What do you got going on you want to share with the audience?
Same. Just growing and being open. We always think about a second store. I don't mean to be announcing anything. I'm not announcing anything, but that's where we're headed.
That's exciting.
Our neighborhood is so supportive and our holiday season is so nutso that I'm always like, should we be doing holiday pop up somewhere else? Or we should, you know, just like, what else can we be doing in New York?
Yeah. What can we add to it? That's awesome.
Yeah. What can we offer more? We're going to get through summer and then sort of buckle down and see where we're at.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're there. Come visit.
I'm there. Come see me.
Come see us. I'm always there. In fact, I'll be at the counter. Just walk in.
Well, okay. Tell folks where they can find you in person and then online.
So we are at 225 Court Street in Cobble Hill, Brooklyn. And we're a Measure Twice shop. The Instagram feed is, that's where we're at.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Kimberly, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate you.
Thank you. I love it.
I love it.
Love you.
If you enjoyed today's episode with Kimberly, please head to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and write a review. Not only do I love reading how our little show has helped your business, but those reviews also help us attract high-quality guests who can help you in your business. And if you're looking for help strengthening your wholesale sales systems, make sure to join the waitlist for the next round of Paper Camp. It's a 4-week intensive coaching program that we only run twice a year. We do it live. We have found that our students get way better results when they have opportunities to ask questions, get tailored feedback for their unique circumstances, and really have an opportunity to learn from and hear from multiple people in the industry. So we're talking buyers, manufacturers, sales specialists, and more. We bring those people in to share their different perspectives and show how there's no one single way to build a wholesale business, but we're going to show you all the options and let you pick and choose. Direct feedback, tailored wholesale strategies, that's what we do in Paper Camp. It's not just a course that collects dust on the shelf. You're going to learn more and join that waitlist at prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. All right, thanks for listening to the end. I'll be back soon with another new episode.